Welcome to a podcast of The Mike Novak Show. Don't forget that you can listen to Mike live on Sundays from 8 to 10 a.m. on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
And the following is a PSA on behalf of Team Chard, courtesy of the Cope Dog. Heather Fry, are you ready to do a little play-by-play on
yes,
this?
Yes, I am.
Okay, let's roll.
The following is a public service announcement from Team Chard. You may cast your vote in the One Seat Chicago campaign anytime between now and April 1st.
Yes, he's in
he
a big
is a superhero.
But while
in
you
wait
to find out who is the winner.
Or is that Chard
Team
on his
Chard.
Chest there?
No,
Chard.
It's actually Broccoli.
Okay, he's a
Here
Broccoli man.
Here are some upcoming seat swaps you might want to attend. Seat swaps are great places to get to know
he's
other gardeners
in, a chair,
in your community.
Looking through a telescope.
They are also a great way to trade in all of your eggplant and radish seeds for Chard.
And he does
the
Lurie have
Garden Seat
front,
Swap
broccoli.
Will take yeah. place on Saturday, February 12. The Forest Park Community Garden will be holding their seat swap on Sunday, February 27.
His voice is warbling.
The Peterson mm-hmm. Garden Project Edible Seat Swap will be happening on Sunday, March 6, although Team Chard recommends that you grow your seeds before eating them.
I believe
These
that's
are
a
just
joke.
A few of the seat swaps on Team Chard's calendar. Keep your eyes glued to the interwebs
That's
to stay up to date on all of
there.
The city goings on in this city in a garden. Mr. Brown Thumb, Ooh. Mike Now, and Snarky Vegan are a few good accounts to follow on Twitter for keeping up with
Mike
everything
now.
Related
yeah.
to urban gardening
Snarky
in
Vegan
Chicago.
And Mr. Brown Thumb ain't so
also
bad
be sure
either.
To no, visit OneSeedChicago.com to find out more about the race between eggplant, radish, and chard. Make sure to cast your vote for Team
He's
Chard.
He's getting excited.
He's very excited.
April
he was waving
1st.
His arms in the
yes.
air there.
Team
yes.
Chard approves yeah. of this message.
I believe.
Well, that was kind of him.
Aww.
Broccoli boy, bringing the spreading the word. Live from the beautiful Showcase Studios on South Pulaski Road, just across the street from the 53A bus stop and in between Paco's Tacos and Zaka Tacos, it's The Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast green, gardening, and environment program. Heard every Sunday right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. True currents and thriving seas. Wind blowing through breathing trees. Strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in the main.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, our business's people and their love for trees. And by Sid's Greenhouses, Chicagoland's premier garden centers. And by WRD Environmental, creating sustainable landscapes for today and tomorrow. He's the best thing to happen to the environment since the solar-powered hamster wheel. Great. Now he's putting hamsters out of business. Here he is, Mike Novak.
I think that we should talk like this all day on the show.
Did you ever see the old 80s movie War Games with Matthew Broderick? When they fight this supercomputer?
Yeah.
And it's, shall we play a game? That's what I think every time I hear that guy. Is
Didn't we go through this last week?
I think so, but it's the
And I was talking about how the computer... And I made the mistake. I called the computer Dave. It was Hal.
Yeah.
The Hal... Hal... Was it Hal 9000? I believe in
I
the.
I don't remember. In the movie? It was
yeah.
Joshua.
No,
oh.
not that. I'm
oh.
talking about the real.
The real one.
the only really good science fiction movie ever, 2001: A Space Odyssey.
Okay.
Idiocy. Yeah. A Space Idiocy. Hal 9000.
Yeah. Oh,
yes.
We got tweeted.
Ow, that hurts. You know, it's fun. We're sitting here as we're ready to go on the air.
It's like reading Peanuts cartoons out loud. Charlie Brown is going to the mailbox with a big wheelbarrow.
I
think the voice, like the wah, 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 is
yeah,
like...
It, well, and it warbles a little bit
yeah,
there, too, because
yeah.
the way that the computer program works, and we played it at the top of the show, and Cope Dog put that together for Team Chard. Woo, Team Chard! It's a program that I talked about last week. X something or other, who cares?
XS or something.
And, XS, yeah.
Well, that was the logo on the bottom.
Yeah, it's a program that you type in the words and it speaks for you. I haven't tried it yet because I don't have that many hours in my day that can be sucked up by yet another computer program.
I know.
It's bad enough dealing with Twitter and Facebook and everything else, and the website and the podcast and everything we put together for this. Oh boy, you know, because but you know what Coke Dog is doing out there. It's very important because it's.
Shock the monkey?
He is shocking the monkey.
Shocking the monkey.
Even as we speak. For Team Chard. So everybody,
Apes in space for Chard.
Everybody shock the monkey for Team Chard. That's what I say. It's been an interesting, extra normal. Thank you.
Extra normal.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we just got.
Yep. Snappy J Dog.
Yeah.
Helped
tweeted
us. Thank
us.
You.
A couple of things today. It's been an interesting week. Because I'm not going to be able to talk about it much today, but I'm hoping to do it in the next week or so about the USDA's decision to allow genetically modified alfalfa to go out into our fields, which I think is a really, really bad idea for a number of reasons, and it's been approved. And the only way that could possibly stop at the moment is if the president himself decided that it's not going to happen. But come on, Tom Vilsack's his guy in the USDA. That was disappointing this week. And then it was disappointing, and it's something we will talk about later on the show, when I discovered that the City Council of Chicago, which was supposed to debate the Clean Power Ordinance, which is an ordinance that was introduced by Alderman Joe Moore from the 49th, the fighting 49th, last year. And it was going to go to, it was going to be, there was going to be a hearing on it on the 14th, on Valentine's Day, of all days. Well, that's been canceled. It looks like the Daley administration is putting pressure on the City Council not to consider the Clean Power Ordinance, and that would, of course, shut down or at least mitigate the pollution coming out of the Fisk and Crawford coal-fired plants within the city limits of Chicago. And that is not going to happen, the hearing, but Alderman Moore is going to be on the show today in the second hour, probably around 10:30, and talk about this. He's still planning to have a hearing, whether or not it's an official one. And he wants folks to show up, and I'm sure that people like who are from the Clean Power Coalition might show up. Nothing official can be done, but you can show your displeasure with this turn of events. So we'll talk to Alderman Moore about that second hour. And related to that, just before Alderman Moore comes on, Jack Darren, director of Illinois Sierra Club, is going to be on to talk about something we started to talk about last week, Heather, which was the Leucadia Power Plant. That's also threatens to be located in the city of Chicago, which is a coal gasification plant. We can talk about the difference between burning coal and gasifying coal and what that means. And Jack Darren will be on. You were laughing there. Did you see something on
Facebook? A friend of mine just said he just discovered me like a week ago. We were friends back in early college days. We lost touch, found each other on Facebook. He's listening because I posted that we were on, and he said, I'm listening right now. Wow, 2 minutes in, and I get a War Games in 2001 reference. I'm a total nerd. Laugh out loud. So he's enjoying himself already.
Okay. I'm glad.
We've hooked him. It's my old friend Bill. How's it going, Bill?
One listener at a time. And I'll tell you what, if you missed the show.
We got a little something for everybody.
If you missed the show, you can always go online and play back the podcast. You can download it through iTunes. You can go to this week's show if you want information about things we've talked about. I put things up there. I kill myself doing this.
You should see he doesn't sleep. He just sits in front of the computer and his hands move and no one's sure what's happening.
And you know what happens when I sit there in front of the computer?
I thought it was science.
Oh, well, it could be that. No, science. I don't have anything to do with science. I just shocked the monkey.
Poor
poor monkey. What did it ever do to you?
I don't know.
It's only Bonzo. He made one movie with Ronald Reagan. Just let it go. Stop punishing him forever.
Well, they got monkeys in commercials now.
They have monkeys
again.
Everywhere. Monkeys get jobs and more actors, I know.
I know.
Seriously, and Americans love their monkeys.
And speaking as a... As
I mean, how many times they remake King Kong? Three?
That's a big monkey.
That's a huge monkey. Uh-huh. I'm talking about a shock.
Yeah. And I don't get those jobs. No.
Nope. Monkey. CGI monkey.
Yeah.
Makes more money than you do.
CGI monkey makes... Yeah, exactly. Because
he's... How much did that orangutan in the Clint Eastwood one make?
Lots more than I've ever made. Okay. But the point I was making is that you can always go to MikeNovak.net, go to this week's show if you missed something. I've got the links there to all the organizations I talk to and some explanation. I don't want to sit there all day shocking the monkey on Saturday just for naught. So look it up. And, of course, we're on Twitter. We're on Facebook. The Twitter sphere goes nuts every Sunday morning when we're on the show. And it's great. I love having these people who and
it's
a
like
lot
instant
of,
gratification radio.
A lot of it
you
is.
Know, it is.
And I know that a lot of you listening are not on Twitter. That's okay. Just listen on the radio. What's the genetically modified?
What's that?
Oh
my God, that's wrong.
This is so wrong.
You describe it. It's your show.
All right, Mike Sanders just. Mike Sanders just walked in here and handed me a picture. I don't know where he got this. And it, on the back it says, genetically modified alfalfa. And then there's a picture of alfalfa from the Our Gang series at not looking good.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's like he's been hybrid with one of the Planet of the Apes
or
guys.
Or a robot. This is just so sad. Yeah.
He's gone a cyborg
get
monkey.
Get it genetically modified alfalfa. Thanks, Mike Sanders. All right.
The Monsanto folks got nothing on this one.
No.
Oh, gosh.
As a matter of fact, I just got tweeted on this. They would love to hear some academics' thoughts on the GMO alfalfa, and that's what I was talking about. I think next week we do that. I get somebody to. I was thinking somebody perhaps from Food and Water Watch, but you're right. Let's get some scientists on here. Let's get somebody who's studied this for a while to talk about the effects of GMO, and that's the problem. That's what they're going to tell us is that we don't know. That's the way we do it in America. We throw the products out there and then 10 years later go, maybe that wasn't such a good idea.
High fructose corn syrup.
Well, yeah, that's really good for us, too.
It's like, sugar's bad for you, use this instead.
Uh-huh.
They use this instead, 10 years later they find out that's actually worse than the actual real, honest-to-God sugar. So
I like sugar.
I like it, too.
Sugar's good stuff.
It's funny because now you can go to the store and you can see, like, throwback sodas. And it says in big red letters, made with real sugar.
That's just wrong.
Isn't
too.
That insane?
Yeah, it is.
I'm like,
it's like
oh.
real. It's like a class when they got rid of Coca-Cola. And then you're probably too young to remember.
I remember it. Then they brought it back as classic Coke because everybody hated new
and
Coke.
Everybody to this day, I think it was a marketing ploy. Either that or they just they recovered very well. But that's an interesting story. All right. So to start the show today, we're going to talk to Steve Sherman. And let's get him on the phone there, Heather. And he's from a brand new bank. And I mean a bank, not a seed bank, but a bank, Green Choice Bank in Cicero, Lockport, and coming up in Chicago. We'll talk to him about what that means to be a green bank. While we're getting him on the line, I did want to tell you that next week is a very important day for those of you who like to grow seeds. It's Super Sow Sunday. You can find information about it on my website, MikeNovak.net, this week's show. And this is the second annual. And of course, it's a Super Bowl Sunday next week as well. But if you live in Chicago, as I tweeted last night, people who live in Chicago and New York and Philadelphia and Boston are not interested in the game next week. There's no reason to watch.
I'm going to watch, and I want the Steelers to grind them into unrecognizable mush.
Well, see.
I'm an angry sports fan. I said it. I admit it.
It's hard to root for the Steelers.
It's a lesser of two evils. It's a lot like an election.
I don't know. You know, Green Bay can say, at least our quarterback's not a rapist. So, you know.
Now you went there.
I went there, yeah.
Wow. It's his show.
So no reason to watch the Super Bowl. So what you could do is be swapping seeds and planting seeds and order, you know, and this is it's a big Twitter event. Again, if you're not on Twitter, you're not going to do it. But there's a lot of folks who are. And there you go. It's something that you can do on Sunday during the Super Bowl if you're not crazy about the Super Bowl, and it's Super So Sunday. So you get all these folks together all over the country. And the one thing I will say about planting seeds next week, it's early. It's really early to be doing that in this part of the country.
Isn't the ground frozen?
Yep. Well, you're talking about planting indoors, but even planting indoors, you can get a seed going and then not have enough light, and it's still too early to put it out. Unless you got a greenhouse, it's going to be tough to keep the thing going. But there's a thing called winter sowing, and I've got a link to that. And you can find out about winter sowing and what that is. And that is one way where you get the seeds prepared, and then you set them outside. And the elements themselves, the natural elements, will the sun and the warmth will determine when the seed starts to sprout. It's just ready. You've got it in the mix, and then it goes. So that's one thing you can do. So that might be one thing you want to do. See, I love the idea of Super Sow Sunday, but in many parts of the country, it's just too early. And you'll have all these real leggy seeds in your house and go, oh, my, no, my seeds are getting so leggy. My plants are leggy.
Speaking of seeds, my son's birthday is on Thursday, and he got a terrarium as a gift that came with three radishes, three carrots, and I can't remember three other kinds of seeds.
Chard?
I don't believe so.
I think you better go out and get some Swiss chard.
Does it have long, nice roots that you can want, like that a small toddler would like seeing grow down? Like a carrot, and it's a big root.
Yeah, carrots are cool.
Yeah, so but I'm excited because he's going to get to see them start from seed and germinate, and it's just right there.
Excellent.
And we're going to put it right in the kitchen window and just let it have at it, and I'm going to brainwash him young and make him dig plants.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. With that being said, let us go to line one and bring in Steve Sherman. He's lead AP, Chief Operating Officer and Director, Green Choice Bank. How are you, Steve?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm fine. Wonderful to have you on, and congratulations. The bank, you have your first opening ceremony on Tuesday, right?
Yes, Tuesday. We're launching the Midwest's first holistically sustainable community bank, and so we're really excited to get things going.
I guess I got to ask you, it's a sustainable bank for the average person who wants to set up an account and goes into your bank. I know you've refitted the buildings you're going to be in. You have some very old buildings. You're making them LEED certified. And by the way, I noticed in some of the information that I got sent, it was LEED EBONM. And a lot of folks are not going to know what that means. But, of course, LEED stands for Leadership in Energy and Environmental Design. When we call you an AP, you're an accredited professional.
There's a lot of acronyms, but
yeah, there are, and then the EBO, it's sometimes a little off-putting, all these acronyms that you have.
Yeah, well, the plain English way to talk about it is EB is for existing buildings. So there are two ways you can have a green building. You can build it from scratch and use all the right materials. Or sometimes what's a lot harder is you take an existing building and you have to change the way that building runs. And so we're retrofitting it. We're changing the way we use our energy and water and the way we built the interior. So we use paints with no VOC and use recycled materials. But then it's an ongoing process. So to get a LEED existing building certification, you actually have to walk the walk. And you have to measure how much energy you're using and how you source your office supplies, for example, and all sorts of things like that. So it's a pretty high bar to achieve that.
Yes, it is. The question I would ask, however, is how does the average per individual who banks benefit from that? I mean, they can feel good about mm-hmm. you doing the green stuff, but really, they're interested in their money. And it doing well for them and you taking care of it. How does that translate?
Well, it translates in a couple ways. You touched on one, but I mean, at our core, we're a community bank, and it's a bank that takes care of its customers. But with our green mission, we reward our customers for making green choices too. So not only can you feel good about who you're doing business with and know that sustainability really flows through every aspect of how we run our business and that we're conscious about more than your money, but if you bank with us and you make green choices with the way you bank with us, whether it's for your deposit account, if you opt out of the paper statement and use bill pay and things like that, we'll pay you a higher rate. Or if you're a green builder, the loan you have with us, we can give you better terms on that loan. So we make you feel good for making good choices.
That makes sense. And I understand. All right, you're starting Tuesday, and this would be the bank in, I'm looking at my notes here. Where is that? Cicero.
We have locations in Cicero and Lockport, and we'll be launching both on Tuesday. We're having our event in Cicero on Tuesday and then in Lockport the following Tuesday. And then later on this year, we'll be opening our flagship location at the Green Exchange at Diversity and the Kennedy. And that's an enormous sustainable business community down on the north side of Chicago.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to ask you about. I mean, it's interesting that you've got your branches that are going to open first before your flagship location, and that's because the Green Exchange hasn't opened. And of course, that has been delayed for a while. It keeps getting pushed back. When do you see that happening?
We're looking towards the middle of the year. It's taken a while. If you've ever driven by it, it's an enormous building. So it's not a small project that they undertook, but they're very close to finishing it up. And then it's really going to be an amazing development with lots of green businesses and a lot of resources for people who are interested in sustainability. Sort of the largest self-contained sustainable business community in the country.
We're talking to Steve Sherman, who is Chief Operating Officer and Director of Green Choice Bank. And that information, you can find the link on my website, mikenovak.net. Go to this week's show or www.greenchoicebank.com. The question I would ask, in reference to the average Joe comes in and wants to deposit money, how is a community bank different from one of the big banks? I am with a lot of people in this country who are not real happy with banks at the moment, okay? And I'm sure you understand that, and I'm sure you've seen that reaction to having banks and large financial institutions get bailed out while the middle-class Americans get virtually nothing. What separates you from those banks that have been wreaking so much harm on the American economy?
Well, I'd like to say we're the antithesis of that. I mean, the big banks are about running a lot of volume through their business. A community bank is grassroots, it's in the community, and you know that when you make a deposit with that bank, that they're leveraging it in the community. And, you know, in particular, with our mission, we take on top of that when you deposit with us, the funds are being leveraged locally, but also sustainably in the community. So it's a values-based choice that you can make. You put your money where your heart is, with a bank that you can believe in, and you know with a community bank that they're doing things locally and on a smaller scale and with a lot more personal attention. So really what we're about is relationship banking. You come in, we'll know your name, we'll treat you like a person, we'll treat you with respect, and take care of your financial needs.
Well, you say that you will be locally investing. What kind of transparency do you have so that your customers know you are doing that?
Well, we can't share the names of every borrower that we do business with, but we will talk about and highlight the great things that some of our customers are doing. So, for example, the first green prefabricated house built in the city of Chicago, we're financing that, you know, and that's a huge accomplishment for the city of Chicago and for the people who are behind that. We're helping to finance that and make it possible because we believe in it. We understand green building, and so they felt that we were the right bank to support them on that project.
Well, and I'm sure that, you know, the high-profile things, and you're going to make sure folks know about. Like I said, if I'm an investor, I want to know what you're doing and how that is benefiting my community to the greatest degree possible. You'll be interested to know. I just got tweeted here, Steve, from a person who wants to, and she said, in Cicero? Where? That address, it might be one of your first customers here, Steve.
Yeah,
okay?
We'd love to have you. We're at 5225 West 25th Street, just west of Laramie.
And the other one, of course, in Lockport is at 838 South State Street in Lockport. Here's a question, again, coming over Twitter. Will they also not be using paper statements to cut back on paper use? That's pretty interesting. Any initiatives like that, Steve?
Yes. I mean, sustainability is really part of everything we do. It's from the buildings to the back office to, like I mentioned, the products and services that reward customers. So we're really trying to walk the walk. And so in addition to the buildings that we talked about with the LEED certification and really trying to run those buildings as efficiently as possible, we're trying to re-engineer the back office to really minimize the footprint of our operations. You know, banks, as you know, are a paper and resource-intensive business, and we're really taking a look at every aspect to be as paperless as possible. So, yes, we offer electronic statements. If you use electronic statements, we can reward you for that. But we're also trying to really re-engineer our processes to take the paper out of that as well. And we're very mindful of how we source our products and our materials. So, for example, our debit cards are made out of 100% recycled plastic. That was sort of a hard thing to get done, but we thought it was the right choice. And it's different than what you find at other banks.
Where do you find somebody to do 100% recycled plastic for a credit card?
Well, it took a little bit of searching, but we managed to find the right ones. And you know, it's making decisions like that, you know, trying to think a little differently as a bank. And
yeah.
That's what we're about.
You know, it's interesting. I do, through my bank, which is also a community bank, I do a lot of online banking, which I love. I love. But I'll tell you, it's hard to go completely paperless simply because those are your financial records. You know what I mean? It's sometimes good to have that backup because computers go down and statements get missed and things happen.
We don't expect everyone to have to get rid of every piece of paper in their lives. You know, that's not what we're here to dictate or determine. You know, obviously if you have electronic statements, we store those for you so you don't have to worry about losing them. But, you know, there will always be people who are more comfortable with using paper or if you want to print out. But at least we give you the opportunity to be paperless or just print selectively. If you need just one page of that four-page statement, you can print that out too. So it gives you a lot more flexibility.
Absolutely. That is Steve Sherman from Green Choice Bank. Before I let you go, I'm going to let you show off a little bit and tell me about some of the retrofitting to get LEED status that you've done at the two banks, the two branches that you have.
Well, I mean, it was really an interesting process to go through this and look at some of the cool things that we can do because the design looks fantastic, but what's really exciting is the little details, like you said. So we've got some of the wood that we've put into the design is reclaimed from a turkey coop in Tennessee.
Excuse me, I could have sworn you just said a turkey coop. I'm sorry, sir.
Yes.
This can't be possible.
Believe it or not, it is. So, it's little details like that are fun to talk about. The recycled content of our floor and our carpet and the no VOC paints, and we've got water-efficient fixtures in the bathrooms and all sorts of great things, energy-efficient lighting. It's been a really fun project. In addition to that, we reclaimed a whole wall system, like the walls for offices.
Yeah, I'm looking at the handout you have, and it says reclaimed Hayworth wall systems diverted from landfills. I don't even know what that means.
I mean, it's sort of a wall system is something instead of building the walls, you know, they're sort of pre-built walls. And there was a business that was going to throw them out, and our contractors and our architects got wind of that, and we managed to rescue it before it got sent off to the landfill.
Mm-hmm. And you've got, I see, low-flow toilets and fixtures in the building.
Exactly.
Energy Star dishwasher, replaces use of paper and styrofoam plates and cups. Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
High-efficient paperless hand dryers. Good stuff.
Yeah, it's been really rewarding to see the transformation in these buildings, and it's a process. You know, it's an ongoing process. We're always trying to do more and trying to make the right choices, and we think we're on the right path. And if you think that you want to do business with a bank that is trying to make the right choices, then maybe we're the bank for you.
I've got one more question for you before I let you go here, and that is, I was looking at the timeline for what you were doing here, and you acquired Family Federal Savings of Illinois, which was founded in 1910. How does that work? I mean, do you go shopping for a bank? if you know, you started yours in 2008, you applied for your federal bank charter, and I'm wondering, you know, are you looking for a bank that fits your needs, and is it a hostile takeover or a nice one? What? How does that work?
It was a nice one. We're nice people, and so we do things in a nice way. We started this process to start the Green Community Bank a couple years ago. And we found an opportunity to acquire this bank. It's a 100-year-old community bank that's been serving its community like a good community bank should. And it was really a perfect fit for what we're trying to do, and a great platform to make this transformation that we're trying to do. They had buildings that were great opportunities to really retrofit. And so we're turning this bank into something completely different, but one with its still core roots of relationship banking, taking care of the community, investing in the community, but with an added component of sustainability and a triple bottom line approach to what we do, to looking at people, planet, and profit.
The triple bottom line there, people, planet, and profits. And one more question we just got in was about energy efficiency in lighting, and I'm looking at, again, your release here, high efficiency lighting in the building, and you've got ceiling skylights you're employing. So you're doing all the stuff that gets you LEED certified.
Yeah, it's you really have to take a complete holistic look at the building and try to make it run as efficiently as it's possible and do it the right way.
Well, there you go. And the bank opens this Tuesday, February 1st. The tour is going to be at the bank in Cicero, and that's 5225 West 25th. And then a week later, on February 8th, there will be and it's like an open house for each of these, right?
Right, right.
The other one at 830. Right, 838 South State in Lockport, and then sometime during the year, and given the Green Exchange and its the slow pace at which it's, we keep hearing it's going to open at some point, and perhaps it will.
It will. If you drive by, you see the changes happening. So it's coming. We'll be there.
Okay. Well, if you're there, because that's in my neighborhood, and I will be there too for when you open. Steve Sherman, congratulations. Thank you for being on the show this morning, and good luck. And folks, if you want to bank with a green bank, you're not happy with your current bank, and you want to do something for your own community, and perhaps in a green way, you might want to go to greenchoicebank.com or walk into one of the facilities and talk to somebody there. Maybe you'll even talk to Steve, and he'll give you the tour and tell you why you should put your money there.
I'd be happy to. Well, thanks for having me on the show, Mike.
All right, take care, Steve.
All right, you too.
Bye. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. These days, more and more businesses are going green, and that's good news. But the growing popularity of green service providers also points to the value of those who have led the way. WRD Environmental is one of them. They're great folks. Since they were formed in 1997, WRD's mission has been to create sustainable landscapes. They have always used locally grown native plants when possible in their design and build projects, used recycled energy-efficient supplies, and sought nature's balance. Simply put, being green is part of their DNA. Even their location speaks to their commitment. the Chicago Center for Green Technology, one of the nation's greenest buildings. Their civic contributions towards sustainability run deep. Staff members are on the boards of a variety of green organizations, and through the years, the folks at WRD Environmental have donated their expertise to many green nonprofits. For experience, sustainable landscape development, trust the professionals at WRD Environmental. On the web, you know where, WRDEnvironmental.com.
Hey, gardeners. Want to be inspired? Make plans to visit Cantini Gardens in Wheaton, the 500-acre former estate of Robert R. McCormick. Cantini isn't just beautiful, it's a horticultural masterpiece. Stroll through the spectacular formal gardens created by renowned landscape architect Franz Lipp and marvel at the sheer variety of annuals, perennials, ground covers, trees, and shrubs. You'll love Cantini's Idea Garden, Rose Garden, and Native Prairie, too. Cantini has something for everyone, including museums, picnic area, gift shop, and restaurants. Plan your visit today at cantini.org.
Here's a tip from the Care of Trees. It looks as though we may have some significant snow this week. We're going to find out from Rick DeMaio in just a second. So here's what you should think of to protect your trees and shrubs. When removing snow, be as gentle as possible. Gently brush it off. Don't shake the branches, as this might cause them to break. It's especially true for evergreens, which can collect excessive amounts of snow. You know, for most deciduous trees, you know, that's not a problem. But for evergreens, yeah, you might be having some trouble. Now, if the snow is frozen on the branch and will not brush off easily, it's best to let it melt naturally to avoid damage to the tree or shrub. If you know that snow is coming and you think that a plant might have trouble, relatively small trees can be wrapped together or the leaders tied with strips of carpet, strong cloth, or nylon stockings. Don't, you know, nylon stockings, gardener's best friend. Who is it? Rich Eyre once told me, because he's a tree guy, but Rich's Fox Willow Pines, he says, nylon stockings. You can tie stuff up in your garden, and it's not going to hurt. You know, you sometimes want to wrap wire or rope around it, and you can cut into the bark, not with a nylon. So they're good. It's a good tool in the garden. Now, don't forget to remove those ties in the spring. Whether you want to make sure all is well with the trees in your yard, you're changing your landscaping, or you're moving, invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220, 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees, their business is people and their love for trees.
Charlie is a friend of mine, used to live downtown in a little rented place up behind the movie house. Charlie had a rooftop garden planted out of view. And what was Charlie's garden hiding should be clear to you. I'm going up, up in Charlie's garden. Going up, up in Charlie's garden. Those eight roses growing up in Charlie's garden.
If they're not, up, huh? I know another word for up.
Up? You like that one, huh?
I did. What was that?
That is New Riders of the Purple Sage. Little tune.
Explains everything.
Oh, didn't we talk about sage getting you off, too?
Oh, yeah.
A few weeks ago?
Yes, we did. Yes.
Okay.
Those wicked plants.
Let's go to line one and bring in Rick DeMaio, the late Rick DeMaio.
The late Rick DeMaio?
Well, you tell me. No, I'm kidding, but you're still a little under the weather, huh?
Yeah, a little under the weather. So, again, what is this New Riders of the Purple Sage stuff? Is that the stuff you put under your tongue or on top?
Oh,
geez. You guys went through the 70s. Don't act like you don't know.
I'm telling you.
Heather, I do. I just don't remember.
Neither of us does. So
it's just a blur.
Yeah.
I have this purple sage bands.
I have this vague recollection of bell bottom pants and paisley shirts, and that's it.
Oh, my God. Those were. Well, Mike, and I don't know about you, but I grew up with a couple of brothers and a sister who are all about 6 to 8 years older. So even when I was 12, you know, I was I was a kid hippie because you had to have everything that your brothers and your sister
had. Of course.
So, yeah, I used to, I couldn't wait to get the pants with the different colored pockets and the shoes that I probably really could have worn to the circus rather than to school. Yeah, but it was, you know, it was all about wanting to be older and wanting to, you know, watch what was on TV, and you put the clothes on and you do that little dance, and next thing you know, your mom's yelling at you to clean your room up, you know.
So. You know what, I got to tell, okay, this is a I can't believe I'm going to say this on the radio. In the 70s, at one point, I had these, they weren't patent leather, but they were shiny, glossy, kind of maroon-colored platform shoes.
Right,
all right?
Right. And, maroon kind of off-purple, right?
Yeah. And,
you didn't have the fish and the goldfish ones in there, did you?
No, they were just plain. I thought they were so cool.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm already 6'1", so I was like 6'4".
Right.
It's like, I was like a Mod Frankenstein in these things.
Gosh.
It was just, so I'm thinking, what am I? And I look back and I go, what was I doing?
Does the photograph exist?
No. No photographs of that. But I'm thinking now, what was I doing wearing 3-inch high platform shoes, you know, when
the
I'm already.
Boogaloo?
You know, you could fall off of those and break your neck.
Right.
Well,
you can use them now to, you know, do some, you know, some tree cutting for the care of trees, right?
You're right. I don't need a stepladder.
Or you can wedge them under a flower pot for drainage.
You know, I wish I still had those. I would just to show you, just you know, and you got to understand, I don't have feet. I have boats. All right, I'm size 12. So
well, that's not so bad. So am I. So we're in the same boat.
Okay, ba-dum-bum. but these things were just amazing, and I have learned to love tennis shoes, gym shoes. You know, that's so much.
You're
better.
You're talking to the girl who wears her snow boots everywhere. In the wintertime. Like, you know, I'll go out for a fancy dinner. I'll look great from the angle up and have my snow boots on from the angle down because I'm function over fashion.
Well, you'll definitely be functional, Heather, if you wear those Monday and into Tuesday.
Really?
Oh, my God. We got, you know, I had sent you the information last night.
Yeah, I was looking at that, and you're saying significant snow somewhere along the line.
Yeah, and now I was looking at some of the newer data. You know, coming online, and I'm looking at some, you know, additional, you know, numerical models. It's always good to look at like 4 or 5, maybe 6 different models to kind of get a combination of what the computer models are thinking. And I'm telling you, it now looks even better for a significant snowfall a little bit further north. Yesterday and last night, I was at Fox last night. Even though I wasn't on the air, I was actually helping out Tammy Souza, who's now back on the air. And I'm glad she was, because my voice just wasn't going to be able to hold up to doing a newscast. But it was looking like there was going to be at least a 12 to 18-inch band anywhere from about Kankakee, at least from Champaign to Kankakee into about maybe Crown Point. Now that 12 to 18-inch snow band appears to be lined up directly across the Chicagoland area, and looking at what we call the grid point data for both O'Hare and Midway, this is punching out, Mike, believe it or not, nearly 2 inches of water with temperatures in the mid to upper 20s. And now we're talking close to 20 inches of snow.
Yikes.
So this is going to go down as a significant snowfall. In fact, I just did a presentation marking the anniversary of the Great Chicago Blizzard. We had a huge area of Arctic high pressure. We had a snow system coming out of Texas, moving through Arkansas, Oklahoma, those, you know, those panhandle hookers, so to say, bringing up all that Gulf moisture. And this pattern, believe it or not, is almost mirroring exactly the blizzard of 67. And I think there's at least a 90% chance of somewhere within 50 miles of downtown Chicago seeing up to 20 inches of snow between Monday night and Wednesday morning.
Holy smoke.
Yeah, this is going to be a significant event by all accounts.
All right.
Wait, repeat that inch amount for me one more time.
Anywhere between 12 and up to 20 inches of snow. anywhere within about 50 miles of the Chicagoland area.
Now, as obviously, you know, some there have been warnings about this for several days, and, you know, and everybody kept saying, well, you know, let's watch the model and see how it comes together.
Well, we're going to storm watch now. That was issued early this morning by the Weather Service.
The storm watch has been issued. Okay, so when does this begin to start? When does this, we start getting
this? Well, there's actually going to be two different parts to this. The first part actually comes in sometime after around 9 or 10 o'clock tomorrow morning, when we get a little bit of a system coming in from the north and west. This is on the leading edge of the colder Arctic air. But we can easily see 2 to 4 inches of snow between about, say, 10 a.m. Monday and about 6 p.m. Monday. Then we'll get a bit of a break. So I think everybody's going to, you know, be out and about tomorrow afternoon saying, this is the beginning of the end, blah, blah, blah. But no, that's going to be the first part. Then we'll catch a little bit of a break overnight, Monday night into Tuesday, and all that's going to happen is the snow is going to go from a steady snow to kind of flurries. It'll be off and on for about 10 or 12 hours. And then the steadier snow commences sometime midday Tuesday, closer to probably midday about the noontime hour. And again, this is still 2 days away. But all indications show that this system has got a tremendous amount of moisture with it. The only thing that can probably lower the amounts, and I've seen this happen before, is if we have a massive thunderstorm outbreak or severe weather outbreak that occurs over southern Illinois into Missouri, Arkansas, and parts of Tennessee. What happens with that, Mike, is these tall clouds up to 40, 50,000 feet generally tends to block the inflow of moisture northward. So it cuts down significantly on your snow. But still, what happens with this particular event is what calls it, it matures pretty much right over Illinois and western Indiana. So it kind of pivots. So it's almost like taking a seesaw and pivoting in it only halfway, and we're kind of like in between both ends, and that's where the heavy snow is going to line up for about 18 hours. And when you look at these numbers and you look at these temperatures, easily we're going to get at least a foot. The question is whether or not we get a foot and a half or 2 feet. And then obviously, you know, strong winds of 30 to 35 miles per hour. The only good thing about the storm moving further north is that we have probably less of a chance of any lake effect snow, which was somewhat of a concern. But, I mean, if you get 2 or 3 inches on top of 15 at this point, who cares? I mean, look at New York City. They've had nearly 60 inches of snow this year.
Yeah.
You know, we've had it close to 25, which is above average, but we may actually double our seasonal snowfall in some areas by the time this thing is done and over with by Wednesday.
Well, I'm going sledding.
Well, you know, I've got a...
I don't know if you can go sledding that much.
Really?
Snow. No, that's too much snow, yeah.
I've got a garden talk on Wednesday at 10:45 a.m.
Do you have those sounds, big, like, tennis racket shoes?
It sounds like
snowshoes?
It's right in the middle of this thing.
Yeah, I think right in the middle of the storm, most likely Tuesday night into Wednesday morning. But, yeah, just, you know, do the effects of how big snows keep crowds down at garden talks, Mike.
Yeah, listen, I keep crowds down at garden talks. I don't need this. So
well, that's an ongoing talk. You can
so,
that one, right?
So to the country gardeners of Northfield,
here's hoping.
This is going to be. I may come out on Tuesday night and, you know, just hang out.
Snowball fight.
Well, you know what, Mike? I know we're always talking about snow amounts and liquid water content. The fact that the ground is actually, or at least the air temperature, has been generally mild. You know, it's pretty much been in the low 30s for the last 3 days around here. The ground has, you know, softened up a little bit and allowed some of the snow that we have. You know, we have about 4 inches of snow in some areas, liquid water content, maybe about a half inch. Some of the stuff has actually percolated into the soil, which is good. We haven't had, you know, that extreme Arctic cold. So if we can get a little bit of the snow to kind of percolate into the soil, help the tree roots out a little bit, that'll be nice. Because once we get the snow on top of this snow, we're going to have about, you know, at least 2 inches of water. And then it's going to get really cold Wednesday night, Thursday, and Friday, which is good because, you know, you like to have a snow like this last for a long time. It keeps everything insulated.
Yep.
And as long as it kind of, you know, warms up slowly, we don't get a heavy rain like in the second or third week of February, which I don't think we're going to get. The pattern just seems to be remaining very, very cold. This is going to actually be a pretty good snow for agriculture as we head into Think about it. You know, you hate to say it, or you know, it's not like you hate to say it, but the first day of spring is 6 weeks away.
Oh,
you know, so,
well, you got Groundhog Day coming up here.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah. So when you get these mammoth snows, the last week of January, first couple of weeks of February, these are always beneficial snows as you head into the growing seasons. That's the one good caveat we can take out of this from a positive standpoint.
My friend Sue Markgraf has tweeted. She says, "This is not an acceptable weather forecast."
I guess she's commenting on my rough voice. Is that
Yeah. But it has nothing to do with the prospect of 2 feet of snow.
But Scott Jameson is saying, it's about time we get a big snow. Bring it on. And I'm with him. I said, let's go. Come on. Except for my little garden talk in Northfield, which I don't think it might not happen.
Yeah, well, again, there's still a good 24 to 36 hours to... you know, to tweak these kind of weather forecasts. But
is it likely to go south at all, or is it more seems to be trending northward?
Well, that's always a good question. When you look at numerical models, it's always good to see what the trend is. And the first thing I did this morning was I looked at the information from this morning, and I pulled up all of yesterday's information from a graphical standpoint, and clearly this thing wants to go a little bit north. Now, the thing about this is, then you look at a couple of the runs and you see, okay, now what's the other ones look like? Are they trending a little bit further south? And oddly enough, part of weather forecasting is not so much putting together all the physical and thermodynamic aspects of a storm together, but it's really looking at trends. And I think we've also gotten pretty good with that with political polls. You like to see how the poll is now trending. Is it trending left? Is it trending right? Is it trending center?
And you know, and Rick, you know what that is, don't you?
No, what's that?
Science!
Oh, it's always good to hear that once a week. but without a doubt, this system is definitely trending a little bit further north. But what it does is it really takes the heavier snow band, which was south, and move it a little bit further north. So I still think that most of northeast Illinois has at least 100% chance of seeing at least a foot of snow. Whether or not we get 20 inches, that's still, you know, yet to be determined. But this storm, because of the fact that it's going to be slow-moving, Mike, it's got a lot of moisture with it. It's got a lot of Arctic air that's coming in today and early tomorrow. It's got everything going for it to be probably one of the top five storms ever in the history of Chicago.
Wow, we like records.
It's going to be a big one.
Yeah. Is it then going to pound the East Coast as well, or does it?
No, what happens is it moves into the northern sections of the Ohio Valley, and I wouldn't be surprised if this becomes a rain event for parts of the Mid-Atlantic. Still yet to be determined whether or not it becomes a rain event for New York City, and I hope it doesn't, because I've been getting pictures from a couple of my family members out there, and they have nearly 20 to 30 inches of snow on the ground in many places, and not so much in fields, but they have piles and mounds of snow, you know, 4 to 6 feet high. So that's really when you get into your flooding situations, because not so much if you have 8 to 10 inches of snow, but when you have these mounds of snow covering up these, you know, sewer systems, you know, where the water can't percolate down, that's when you get into serious flooding. And hopefully that's not going to be the case, but it definitely appears to be more of a rain system for the East Coast than it does a snow system right now.
Well, there you heard it, and we're getting the word out all over the ether sphere that big old snowstorm coming, big old Chicago kind of snowstorm.
Yeah, and very much it looks very, very close to what we had back in 1967. I wouldn't be surprised if there's even, you know, some thunder snow in parts of the southern suburbs in northwest Indiana during the day, during the overnight hours on Tuesday. This is definitely going to be one of those significant events with a lot of moisture. So we'll see how it all plays out. It'll definitely be a lot wider around here Wednesday afternoon than it is right now, Mike.
And some in the next few weeks, when you start to feel a little better, I'm going to drag you down here to the studio where we talk climate change, because I want to, you know, put all the pieces of the puzzle together. The weather we've had this year in New York and the East Coast has had, and what the Arctic is doing, and all that, and see how. You know, and tell my audience what you're teaching your classes about climate change and what this all means right now.
Yeah, we'll definitely get that going.
All right, great. Rick DeMaio Weather, you can go to DeMaioWeather.com. You on Fox at all this week?
No, I think my run there is over. I did my fill-in work. They got Tammy
Susan.
I got her trained last night, and as long as...
Nothing like training your replacement, huh?
Yeah, that's kind of how it goes. But you know, I really need to, you know, get back to schoolwork and concentrate on my getting my voice back after my bout with pneumonia. So I'm fine with that, and you know, pass the reins over to someone else. And you never know.
You'll be back. Somebody else is. Yeah, somebody else will grab you. All right, we'll talk to you next week. Get better, buddy. Bye bye. If you plan to grow vegetables this spring and summer, why not start them from seed? We talked about Super Sow Sunday next week, which Heather called Super Sow Sunday, which I thought
did.
Was pretty funny if it's about pigs. But
I did. I kind of assumed it was about pigs when I first saw it. I hate to admit it, but it's true.
You'll save money, have fun, and you can grow exactly the varieties you like. For the cost of one plant, you could purchase a packet of 35 to 40 seeds, sometimes more. Starting plants now from seed gives you almost a two-month head start in the spring. Of course, I mentioned don't get them out too early. And with a little planning, you can have transplants available throughout the growing season so your garden is continuously productive. Now's the time to get some seeds and get ready for this year's vegetable gardens. And SID's Greenhouses and Garden Center is ready to help. Their shipment of flower and vegetable packets is in, and they have the largest selection of seeds in their history. So there's no need to order from catalogs this year because, well, I know some of you will, but if you don't want to, go to SID's because they have what you need, including certified organic seeds. You know the popular varieties go fast, so visit SID's early for the best selection along with expert advice and seed starting supplies. SID's, Chicagoland's premier garden centers, are located in Palos Hills on Southwest Highway and in Bolingbrook on Napier Plainfield Road at Hassert Boulevard. A reminder from SID's Floral Shops, Valentine's Day is just 2 weeks from today. Visit SIDsOnline.com to order Valentine's flowers today.
Want to make a positive move in the housing market? Replace your siding and windows. You'll improve your home's look and energy efficiency, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for your remodeling and energy needs. Siding, windows, solar and wind power, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
All right, second hour of the show. Jack Darin, director of the Sierra Club Illinois chapter, will be talking about the Leucadia and Power Holdings coal gasification plants. That legislation on Governor Quinn's desk. 49th Ward Alderman Joe Moore will be talking about the Clean Power Ordinance hearing, which has been delayed. It's going to be very interesting stuff, so stick around. We'll be right back.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, our business's people and their love for trees, and by SID's Greenhouses, Chicagoland's premier garden centers, and by WRD Environmental, creating sustainable landscapes for today and tomorrow. Here he is again, Mike Novak.
See, that's what we're all about here on the Mike Novak Show. Just love.
Sowing the seeds.
Love, love, love. Sowing them seeds. Welcome back to the second big hour before the big snowstorm.
No.
Not today.
That's a little daunting, yeah, looking
Not
into
tomorrow.
The week.
Starts kind of starts revving up and then...
Late tomorrow
Tuesday,
into Tuesday, right?
No, Tuesday and Wednesday is when the big deal happens. I'm excited. I love big snowstorms. Mm-hmm. I think it's cool. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I don't have to come to work every day here at the radio ranch the way you do.
And have small children.
And have small children.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. So, except I have to try to get to a garden talk. We'll see how that plays out. Let's go to line one, bring in Jack Darin, the director of Sierra Club Illinois Chapter. How are you, Jack?
Good morning, Mike. I'm good.
Great. Thank you for being on the show with us last week. I'm not even sure exactly how it happened, but we got in. Well, there's just a lot of stuff going on right now environmentally and in and around the city of Chicago. Later in the hour, I'm going to be talking to Alderman Joe Moore from the 49th Ward about the Clean Power Ordinance that he sponsored, and which would hold the Fisk and Crawford coal-fired power plants, which are within the city limits in Chicago, would hold them responsible, or perhaps even shut them down. Who knows? But something else popped up on the radar in the General Assembly, State of Illinois, in the lame duck session, and that was passage of two bills, one SB 3388 and the other one SB 1927. The 3388 they call Leucadia, and 1927 Power Holdings, and these are two different plants. One that would be located, the Leucadia, within the city limits on the southeast side of Chicago, and the other one, Power Holdings, downstate, that would affect our gas prices in the state of Illinois. You want to give me a little more background on that, Jack?
Sure. These are two bills that are both very similar. They both, unfortunately, made it to Governor Quinn's desk, and that's where they're at the moment. And just two very similar but very bad ideas. And these are two different out-of-state companies that are proposing to come to Illinois to essentially make the natural gas that we use to heat our homes and cook our food if you have a gas stove. Instead of getting that out of the a natural gas pipeline, making that out of coal. And the plant that's proposed for Chicago, the Power Holdings plant is for southern Illinois, and then the Leucadia is a company that wants to build a plant like this on the south side of Chicago. And they propose to use a mixture of coal and a hazardous waste from the BP Whiting refinery. People may remember the uproar about BP proposing to increase their pollution to Lake Michigan. Well, that's basically is playing out. And the reason that BP is going to have more water pollution and more of this waste that Leucadia wants to use is they're switching over from sort of normal petroleum to this Canadian tar sands, which is a very gunky. It doesn't come out of the ground as a liquid like petroleum. It comes out as a solid. It's actually mining for oil.
Yeah, we've talked about it on the show. I've talked with people from the Natural Resources Defense Council about tar sands, and unfortunately it's really energy intensive, and it creates a lot of toxic waste. It's just not environmentally friendly at all. And so that's possibly, and of course, the BP in the Midwest is sort of the ground zero for that, because this is where that stuff comes, right?
Right, and I think that's part of what this outfit is thinking, that there's going to be a lot of this toxic waste coming out of these refineries, and maybe we could make a little money by trying to turn it into natural gas. I mean, along with coal, and the problem with that is there are really two big problems. It's really expensive, and no one's ever really done this before. And it comes at a time when we are elsewhere in the country. There have been incredible discoveries just in the last 12 months of huge new deposits of conventional natural gas. So the federal government is projecting that for decades into the future, natural gas from this country is going to be relatively abundant and relatively cheap. So these guys have a plan to instead of using that cheap, abundant conventional gas, make it out of coal and this refinery waste, and it's more expensive, and it's dirtier, and there are unknowns about the pollution, so they haven't been able to get investors to really bite and help them build the plant. So they thought they would turn to us, ratepayers. They went to Springfield and said, we'll come and create these jobs in Chicago and at the one in southern Illinois if you, legislature, will make every gas customer in Illinois buy our output for 30 years at a fixed price that's about twice what they're paying today. So a very raw deal for all of us gas customers, and it comes with huge, you know, unknowns and concerns about the new pollution that the plants would bring.
Well, you know, where to start on this?
Right.
It's just, it's so convoluted. You know, first, I suppose I could start with the legislators not protecting the interests of their constituents in terms of gas prices. Energy prices are going up. It looks like gasoline is going to continue to rise again. And with the volatility in the Middle East, who knows about that right now?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, maybe we're going back to the days of, when was it, 2007, when we had such high gas prices, 2008? I can't even remember now. It seems like so long ago.
Both 2007 and 8, right?
Yeah. And yet, the one saving grace in that has been natural gas prices because they've been so low. I can understand. So it makes me wonder what the political motivation is for the General Assembly to pass both of these bills, not just debate them, but then to pass them. And I suppose what they would say is, well, we're creating jobs. Do you think that balances the rate increase?
Well, I think you're right. I think there are a few things at work here. Number one is, obviously, in this economy, there's a huge importance on anything that can create jobs. But the question is, at what cost, and how are we going to go about doing that? We have done actually a very good job, even during this recession, at creating jobs in the wind industry. We've created, just in the 3 years that since Illinois passed its 25% renewable energy by 2025 standard, we've created 10,000 jobs in the wind industry. And just this week, the latest one, we had a out-of-state company from Missouri, a wind company, said that they're going to create 600 jobs downstate Illinois at a wind farm. They didn't need a deal like this. They didn't need someone to guarantee them a market for 30 years at a high price. I think that, so we have seen how to create jobs in new energy fields in very smart ways in recent years, and this just unlearns those lessons. I also think that part of the problem here was the speed. This is a proposal that came out over Thanksgiving weekend is when lobbyists first started to share it with legislators, and as anybody knows, there's been some really big issues on the table in Springfield, from the income tax to the death penalty to civil unions, so people are distracted down there. The media's got plenty of stories to cover, and this is one that I think lobbyists saw an opportunity to sneak through, and they've gotten it all the way to the governor. And we're just hoping that, you know, Governor Quinn, who's got such a great track record as not only a clean energy governor but also as a consumer advocate, will see that yes, jobs are important, but there's a real cost to this that make it a really unwise way to create jobs.
We're talking to Jack Darren, who is the director of Illinois Chapter Sierra Club. You know, the question I have is, and I'll make a statement, which is that Governor Quinn has a chance to step up and prove that he really is an environmental governor. And he's, you know, the last step here in this chain of things, and he can block it, and that's why, excuse me, the Sierra Club has a petition on its website, which you can link to at my website, MikeNovak.net. Did you tweet that?
I tweeted the link for the petition and for the Illinois Sierra Club's homepage.
Great, to get Governor Quinn to step up and block this. You know, lame duck sessions are interesting creatures, because in a sense, I think sometimes legislators use it to vote their consciences, especially if they've been booted out of office and they get to say, well, now, you know, what pressure do I have? Let's just do what needs to be done. But as you said, it's also an opportunity to sneak things through when there's so much on the table. And if you look at the lame duck sessions in both in Illinois and the United States Congress, it's fascinating to see what got done, some of it really important work, and some of it a little below the radar, and not good for consumers. But I had a question, Jack, and my question, you know, came over Twitter, and my question as well is, you talk about the gasification. I'd like to know, how is that different from, say, the coal-burning plants, Fisk and Crawford, in the city of Chicago? And you mentioned them using tar sands, but also coal. They can use both as fuel. And what's the difference here? I'm sure, from what I've read, that the companies, power companies doing this will say, hey, we're not putting out any toxins at all, or we've reduced them to insubstantial levels. What is it you're finding?
Sure. Well, your first question, the difference between a conventional coal plant Those two plants at Fisk and Crawford and most of the coal plants in the country, those are called pulverized coal plants. This, you're basically just taking coal and smashing it up into very fine pieces that can burn more efficiently and burned with, you know, some plants have more pollution controls than others, as you alluded to and as Alderman Moore will be talking more about. The two plants in the city don't have, you know, scrubbers and other modern pollution controls to remove those pollutants. So there's a lot of, I think that most people realize that ultimately, and hopefully that day will be here sooner rather than later, that the days for that kind of technology are numbered. I mean, the very clear connections to asthma and respiratory diseases. So there's a lot of searching in the coal industry for trying to find what's going to be next. And there is a lot of hope around this experimental technology that we could take coal and instead of burning it, we could turn it into a gas, essentially natural gas, and then either burn that natural gas for electricity. That was proposed for a plant by a company called Tenaska that they also considered in the veto session, and that one was defeated. Or you could take that natural gas, that gas that you've made from coal, and just use it as heating and cooking fuel. When you blend in petroleum coke, which is the waste from the refinery, that coal, we all know a lot of the problems with coal, huge carbon source, mercury pollution, other things that contribute to respiratory disease. Petroleum coke is even more dangerous than coal because it has a lot of volatile organic chemicals, PAHs. I don't want to get too much into chemistry here, but chemicals that really have been linked to cancer, to birth defects, to really serious health problems. And we've never had one of these in Illinois, and this company hasn't even applied for an air pollution permit. So you talk to Illinois EPA, they haven't been told what's going to be coming out of this thing. And here the legislature's just decided that it's okay to buy their product at an inflated rate for 30 years.
It's amazing. And actually, that brings up another good point, which is not just Governor Quinn blocking this, but isn't the EPA involved in this, or is it another agency in Illinois?
They will be eventually, but we're really concerned that, you know, if the governor signs this legislation, it becomes law. You know, if you're a permit writer in Springfield at the Illinois EPA, are you really going to be tough on a company that your legislature and your governor has basically mandated that this thing's going to get built and we're all going to pay for it? You know, I think it puts the regulators in a very uncomfortable position if you hand out these sweetheart deals before they try to do their job to protect our health.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned coal being involved in this and tar sands being involved in this and how volatile, you know, the VOCs that are involved in this. And you haven't even mentioned that when you mine coal, you're releasing carbon as well, and you're doing, depending on the way you mine it, whether it's mountaintop removal, it can be very destructive. But it releases carbon in, you know, and it's interesting. I forget where I was seeing it this week. I know, I was talking to the ancient tree guys last week who were cloning our remaining trees. A great giant old growth trees so that we have those genes. And David Millark was talking about that. He said, you know, this is one of the greatest systems ever nature created to take carbon out of the air and put it away where it can't do any harm to humans. And what we've done is we go, hey, look at this stuff. It's in the ground. Let's pull it back out. And now we're releasing all that carbon that nature in its infinite wisdom managed to store away for us. But the thing I would ask is, so that's the downside of that, but isn't there a downside to natural gas retrieval as well, which is the fracking, and how would you compare the two?
Sure. Well, there's some impact for almost any source of energy. So I think that the first and biggest priority of any energy policy has to be conservation and efficiency. That's the one source of energy that is really without negative impact. It's very cheap. It's very quick to deploy. Creates jobs. All the things we talk about with any energy source, energy efficiency always comes up the top. But beyond that, yes, there are, you know, even renewables. There are wind turbines in the wrong place could be a problem for wildlife. You know, solar panels. There are some toxic components involved in their manufacture. So it really becomes a question of balancing what level of risk we're willing to take. These particular plants just seem, I mean, we do need electricity. Obviously, we're going to have to get it from somewhere. We really don't need new sources of natural gas, and there's really nothing driving us to find that new use for coal. Now, if you're the coal industry and you want to get that coal out of the ground and you're willing to suffer those impacts to farmland or the mountains of Appalachia, then, yeah, you need to experiment with risky technologies like this to see if they work. But I don't think, as a society, we really need to do that. I would hope we're approaching the time when we can really move beyond coal, period. Now, natural gas, you raise a really good point.
And hold that thought for just for a second. I just want to get the phone number out, 773-838-9278. I'd especially like to hear from people on the southeast side of Chicago how you feel about this. Are you more concerned about the jobs? Or are you concerned about the air quality? 773-838-9278. Would love to hear from you over there. Go ahead, Jack. You were going to talk about fracking.
Yeah, no question that part of the reason that we have so much new natural gas, really two reasons. One is we have found new deposits in parts of the country, but we also, the companies are using these new methods, some of which are really troubling. Fracking is sort of a way to release natural gas that has previously been trapped in the earth and has not been accessible by conventional means, and that could be done by either jamming water at high pressure down into the earth to try to fracture. Fracking is kind of a slang for fracturing these natural gas deposits. And there are also some toxic chemicals involved that to create the reactions in the rock to let the gas come up. So this is a case where the government is rushing to catch up to what the industry has been doing. There's not been robust regulation in many of the states where this is occurring. I think the federal EPA is looking at it and going to be coming out with some recommendations later this spring. But sure, there are problems with the way that conventional natural gas is extracted and that we need to take a look at too.
We're talking to Jack Darren from the Illinois Sierra Club. You're right, but it's interesting about the natural gas situation. And one of the things I should also do is talk about the consumer end of things here, because I'm one of those people that, and I mentioned this to you when we chatted on the phone the other day, that I'm going to tell folks who are listening to beware of companies that come to you and say they want to lock in natural gas prices because they're going to start to rise. They've been saying that for years. And all that's happened with natural gas prices, perhaps because of fracking and other methods to extract the gas, which we're finding we have in great quantities, is the prices have either been flat or gone down. Right now, I believe I'm on People's Gas. It's 49, 47 cents a therm, something like that, which is pretty low. And I like an idiot, and I, you know, I'm going to cop to it. I wasn't a very smart consumer. I locked into one of these companies, and I'll tell you the name of it, Just Energy. And they're one of the people, and I've seen them out there. I know Cub is looking at them, Citizens Utility Board. And if you go to the ICC website, they warn you, but be careful about the deal you're getting into. I'm paying 79 cents a therm, so I'm paying almost double. Not quite, you know, like two-thirds. What the actual going rate is. So right now, natural gas is I don't know if it's at, it's probably not historic lows, but it's pretty darn low, and it's a pretty efficient way to, or economical way to heat things. So, you know, that's another thing you look at. It that's likely to occur for the near future, I assume, Jack. So what is the point of us taking, expensive gas, creating expensive natural gas and locking, you know, as I got locked into this contract, locking our other citizens throughout the whole state into a 30-year deal where the only thing that's going to happen is you're going to pay more for your gas.
Well, that's another way of describing what this bill does. It essentially takes that decision away from us, whether to do that or not, and makes it for us and puts us on a long-term contract like that. It's the price that is locked in for the Leucadia plant is just a little bit above what you're already locked into with your particular contract. So
if you don't want that, you go to my website or you go to the Sierra Club, Illinois, and you write a letter to Governor Quinn and say, please don't sign this bill. We need to look at this some more. Give me your website there, Jack. I don't have it right in front of me.
Sure. It's illinois.sierraclub.org.
And right on the home page, you will find it says take action. And you can do that. Illinois ratepayers, tell your legislator. It's too late for the legislator. It's now the governor is who's the one person standing between you and higher gas rates in the state of Illinois. Jack Darren, always a pleasure having you on the program. Anything else you want to get out that the Sierra Club's working on at this second?
There's always a lot going on. I think that it's particularly in Chicago, we're about to elect a new mayor and city council. So we're excited, having been talking to lots of candidates, a lot of ideas out there. People, you know, say this election is about public safety and education and jobs, which it is, but also a lot of good thinking about local food and transportation and Lake Michigan and Chicago River. So I'm excited to see what's going to happen to the whole Greening Chicago movement here after we get past this election cycle.
Yeah, it is interesting. It's been put on the radar by a number of these conservation and environmental organizations. What I hope is that it stays on the radar, and I'm going to be talking to Alderman Joe Moore in just a second, and, you know, one of the things is near and dear to my heart is recycling, and I've got some word that some of that might be a done deal before Mayor Daley gets out of office, so we'll talk about that, but a lot of these other issues... Fisk, and that's the other thing I'm going to be talking to him about is the Fisk and Crawford plants, and whether that anything is going to happen on that before Daley leaves office, or is it up to the new mayor? And it's going to, you know, a lot could happen between now and May, and that's going to change the environmental landscape somewhat. So it's pretty fascinating, and I appreciate all your help in getting. The candidates to step up, you along with a lot of other groups to step up and make their positions known on these issues.
Thanks, Mike.
All right, Jack. Take care.
Always have a pleasure.
Great Sunday. We'll talk
you
soon.
Too.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. And we will get to Alderman Joe Moore in just a little bit. Before we do that, just said s'mores. I just got a tweet.
Yeah, you said s'mores?
I said s'mores.
Apparently, I didn't hear you say s'mores, but...
I didn't hear myself say s'mores.
They're chocolatey and delicious. So who doesn't like a s'more? And with 2 feet of snow on the ground in the coming days, big old fire sounds like a good idea.
Yeah, stock up on s'mores.
And then Kathleen put that she's going to stock up your pantry on Monday, so she's already got you covered. You guys will be okay.
Great.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder what she's going to stock it with. S'mores? Chicken soup? I don't know. Get a case of wine.
Big one.
Where are we here? Okay. Oh, a tip from the Care of Trees. With money tight, you're going to hear landscapers say, don't worry, I do tree care. When they say that, here's what you ask them. Are you a trained, educated, and certified tree professional? Because that's what you'll get with the Care of Trees. They are trained in up-to-date technologies and techniques and use safe work practices. They follow the most progressive standards and guidelines for tree care work. They are also bonded and insured to protect you and their workers. Can you say that about Joe the landscaper? With 9 locations, the Care of Trees has been serving Chicagoland for 60 years. Make the Care of Trees your permanent partner in enhancing the value of your landscape. Whether you want to make sure all is well with the trees in your yard, you're changing your landscaping, or you're moving, invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. That number again, 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees, Their business is people and their love for trees.
Hey, gardeners. Want to be inspired? Make plans to visit Cantini Gardens in Wheaton, the 500-acre former estate of Robert R. McCormick. Cantini isn't just beautiful, it's a horticultural masterpiece. Stroll through the spectacular formal gardens created by renowned landscape architect Franz Lipp and marvel at the sheer variety of annuals, perennials, ground covers, trees, and shrubs. You'll love Cantini's Idea Garden, Rose Garden, and Native Prairie, too. Cantini has something for everyone, including museums, picnic area, gift shop, and restaurants. Plan your visit today at cantini.org.
Come on, Heather. Wake up. Wake up. Get with the program.
You can't make me.
She's just going to pull the covers over her head and go back to sleep.
I just think it's the idea of all that snow coming. I can't. That's all I'm going to want to do is just hibernate.
A lot of people might do that.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like a good idea.
And you know what I didn't say to Rick DeMaio? I was going to say, you know what's going to happen is we'll get a dusting and then everybody's going to be really honked off because they made all these plans and they stocked up. And then I don't think so.
I don't think so.
I've seen the weather map.
He's seen the map. Yeah, I trust Rick. He knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm just kind of like, and it's bittersweet because I know it's good. I know it's good for the plants. I know it's good for the soil. I know it's good for the water table. It's good, 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 good. But it's just so darned inconvenient when you're trying to accomplish things. So therein lies
but
my human
kids
flaw.
Kids love it. William is gonna
I know,
love it.
I know. He got an instant snowman kit for Christmas too. So it's like a carrot on a doll rod and like, you know, coal buttons that are on a doll rod that you can just easily stick into the snow without the mess. And so I know he'll want to play with those. We'll have an opportunity.
Speaking of that, we just had a tweet from, who is that? No, thank you. Maybe, I don't know if that's the who's doing the retweeting. But they wanted to know what Thunder Snow is. It's the name of a James Bond movie. Just so you know.
It's filmed in Chicago.
Filmed in Chicago.
Apparently.
During a snowstorm. No, it's just you can get thunder. I mean, it's still clouds. There's still all that activity going on up there. It doesn't have to be in the form of liquid precipitation. It can be frozen.
We talked about that back in December when we had that freakish thunderstorm, but it was rain. Yeah. It wasn't snow. And I asked if they've ever had thunder and lightning in a blizzard because I've never seen that in Chicago. And Rick said, you need like the East Coast moisture. You need that extra moisture in the air to really, but it happens pretty commonplace, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, it's hard to imagine being behind the growing curve when we haven't even gotten to February yet. There are a lot of gardeners who have finished their garden drawings, have already ordered their seeds, and are just waiting for Super Sow Sunday next week, or Super Sow Sunday if you're Heather. You're gonna get the piggies out. Wee. I know. I find those people annoying too. Not Heather, just the super sow.
Right.
Never Heather. But if you don't want to fall behind, I suggest you get your hands on Chicagoland Gardening Magazine. The January-February issue is out, and it's the annual garden planning edition, complete with three holes punched in the side so you can throw it into your binder and refer to it all year long. Now, every month, Adele Klein answers tough questions in the Q&A column in the front of the magazine. In this issue, she lets you know which plants can tolerate the salt you'll be putting down on your walks and driveways when we get hit with that snowstorm in the middle of the week. You'll also learn the basics of how to plant a traffic-stopping container, maybe even heart-stopping. You don't know. And, of course, there's my column on the inside back page. I ask you to read it for one reason. I'm really, really needy. You can purchase Chicagoland Gardening Magazine on newsstands all over Chicago. Better yet, get a subscription. Call 888-265-3600, 888-265-3600, or go to chicagolandgardening.com. Ready? all together now?
And I wonder, still I wonder,
who stops the snow?
Yeah. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. We're going to get to Alderman Joe Moore in just a couple of minutes, but I was talking about salt and the column in the Chicagoland Gardening Magazine for the January-February issue, which is out on newsstands right now, and how Adele Klein lists a bunch of plants.
Hold on. I got a copy back here someplace.
didn't even think
I
about
love that magazine.
Are you still getting yours?
Yes, I'm still getting mine.
Okay, because I was looking
at pictures. I read through them for that, you know, the tips.
You go through the magazine for the pictures.
I actually start in the back. I read you first and work forward.
Oh, you're such a good little producer.
I know. And the photographs are always stunning. And then I have friends, my mother's neighbors are gardening nuts. So once I'm finished with the magazine, I always gift it to them because they're nice enough to let me park in their driveway and things like that. So they get my copy of it when I'm finished.
And there's in the Q&A, which is near the front of the magazine, actually on page 6 this month, the question was, I have planting beds on both sides of my driveway. I'm worried about salt from the street affecting my plants. I want to change to perennials that will give me color and be unaffected by winter conditions. Well, good luck getting a plant that's not affected by winter conditions. Adele Klein writes, there are several colorful hardy perennials that are tolerant of salt. Some possibilities are iris, daylilies, rudbeckias, and native grasses. Greg Stack, who's a buddy of mine, and I ran into it mid-am, and I guess I got to invite him on the show again. Haven't had him on the show in a long, long time, and he was kind of feeling left out. So, Greg Stack from Illinois Extension, come on the show anytime you want. He says he adds the following salt-tolerant plants that are used on major expressways. Yarrow, astilbe, boltonia, coreopsis, moonbeam, echinacea varieties, Siberian iris, liatris or liatris, depending on how you like to pronounce it, or liatris or liatris. You say rudbeckia, and I... Oh, wait, no, that's the clematis. You say clematis, I say clematis. catmint, sedums. These are all salt-tolerant, not clematis. Don't get me wrong, I was just singing there. But these other plants are salt-tolerant. And for grasses, try little blue stem, feather reed grass, pennisetum varieties. When possible, drive around the neighborhood and see what plants are growing in a similar situation. Yeah, but the thing is, in a similar situation, you don't know what they're using.
Right.
They might be using something other than sodium chloride. And that's why I got this handout. I got this newsletter from the Kramer Tree Specialists this week. And they had a thing about... salt and plants. And then I got something from Safe Lawns on the Safe Lawns blog by Paul Tukey. And, you know, I speak for Safe Lawns in terms of organic garden care. So Kramer Tree wrote, one of the major effects of salt is that it causes dehydration. Any cook will tell you that to remove excess water from vegetables such as eggplant or zucchini, you sprinkle them with salt and let sit until the water sweats out. With trees and shrubs, as the sodium accumulates in the soil, it takes up water that would ordinarily get to roots, can even draw water out of the roots. It impedes nutrition. Salt wreaks havoc on our trees and shrubs in two ways. The first is through the soil. The second is through the leaves. When salt dissolves in the groundwater, its sodium and chloride ions separate. The sodium ions replace soil minerals that plants need as nutrients, including potassium, calcium, and magnesium. The nutrient minerals then get washed away, so they aren't available to plant roots. Meanwhile, chloride gets transported to the leaves, where it accumulates and interferes with chlorophyll production and photosynthesis. The other way plants get damaged is through their leaves, which dehydrate when they are repeatedly sprayed with salty water or have salt dust land on them. Now, obviously, that doesn't happen with deciduous plants during the winter. But and the other thing is your pets. They can be dangerous to dogs. The salt, which usually comes in pellet form, can adhere to a dog's paws. As the ice begins melting and the chemical reaction takes place, heat from the reaction causes irritation. A dog can be internally affected when they lick their feet to soothe the burn. Upon ingestion, a dog's mouth and digestive system can become ulcerous. And a dog can also ingest chemicals when they eat snow rather than drinking water or possibly drinking from puddles that may contain the chemicals. So in order to prevent a family pet from suffering from burns or sickness, they should be walked or taken to an area that does not have any chemicals. And if you must pass an area that has de-icing chemicals, it's best to carry your dog, unless it weighs 90 pounds, or put covers on your dog's paws. So
Oh, those poor little things. So they look so ridiculous.
I know, paw pads.
Things.
Paw pads.
But if they're necessary, they're necessary. But yeah. I just feel bad for the dog.
and now that being said, here are different snow melting. I mentioned that Paul Tukey from SafeLawns.org had sent stuff. Now, he lists some of the things you can use. Rock salt, it's the cheapest. We all know that. But it's among the most harsh things you can apply to the lawn in your garden. And it can burn the grass. We've talked about what it does to plants, feeder roots of trees, shrubs, perennials. Now, he writes that the landscape can probably survive one or two applications of rock salt throughout the winter, but you should try to avoid any more than that. And don't even bother to use it if temperatures are much below 20 degrees. But the thing is, we haven't had temperatures like that in Chicago in a long time. Now, calcium chloride, it functions just like sodium chloride by melting the ice, but the primary component is calcium that the plants can actually use if you put it down a few times. It's more expensive, depending on the source, but it's worth it for your landscape and your pets who won't get as sick from licking too much salt. This product works at the lowest temperature range, again, below 25, but we haven't had that in a while. I'm not too worried about that. Then there's calcium magnesium acetate. It's an alternative calcium derivative that combines dolomitic limestone and acetic acid in an environmentally friendly formula that apparently has no corrosive properties at all, but it's also pricier.
Would dolomite actually be beneficial for a garden when it was all said and done?
Well, it Okay, now I'm going to get the...
Okay, because I remember container garden last year, we added it to all the soil.
Yeah, well, that was for those for those containers. Yeah,
and our parking lot garden.
It helps certain plants take up certain nutrients, and so we put them in the. They come with the earth boxes. Mm-hmm. The dolomitic limestone. Yeah, the mix is in there. Now, again, the calcium magnesium acetate is a little pricier. That's what Paul uses. He says his plants near his walkways are worth a lot, so that's what he usually uses. And there's, other things. That's, the Chicago Botanic Garden? They had sand out there. You know, it helps traction, and it's not going to leave chemicals in the ground. It doesn't melt stuff, but, you know, that's always granite dust or wood ash, also a possibility. But calcium chloride probably, there's also potassium chloride. I'm surprised that Paul doesn't list that here. Calcium or potassium chloride are less harmful than sodium chloride and what you might want to go with. All right, let's get Joe Moore on the phone, and we will, I just wanted to get that information out because we're going to have some snow here. And folks need to know what they can put out. Again, it depends on what you're willing to pay to have that out. And we've had some need of it this year. But if you want to protect your plants, I'd go with calcium or potassium chloride. It's probably your best bet. Or you know, if you can handle sand, but like I said, it doesn't melt much. If you plan to grow vegetables this spring and summer, why not start them from seed? You'll save money, have fun, and you can grow exactly the varieties you like. For the cost of one plant, you could purchase a packet of sometimes hundreds of seeds. Starting plants now from seed gives you almost a two-month head start in the spring. Again, be careful. Plan that out. Don't go too early. You know, you might try winter sowing. We've got information about that on my website this week. Go to MikeNovak.net, this week's show. So now is the time to get your seeds, and SIDS Greenhouses and Garden Centers ready to help. Their shipment of flour and vegetable seed packets is in, and they have the largest selection of seeds in their history. This is one of those cool things where you just kind of browse. You go through the aisles and you browse and you look at the seeds you want. They've got certified organic seeds. You know, the popular varieties go fast, so visit SIDS early for the best selection, along with expert advice and seed starting supplies. SIDS, Chicagoland's premier garden centers, are located in Palos Hills on Southwest Highway and in Bolingbrook on Napier Plainfield Road at Hassert Boulevard. A reminder from SIDS Floral Shops, for those of you, you know, who observe Valentine's Day, it's just 2 weeks from today. This is our midwinter festivity. This is what passes for a holiday in the winter. And visit if you want stuff, more information, go to SIDSonline.com. And I know Heather's going to have to say something about that.
I hate Valentine's Day.
Oh, yay!
I hate it. I hate it. I don't think stupid and Cupid rhyme accidentally.
However, in Sid's case, I hope they do very well.
I do like flowers. Now, granted, but I love flowers, but my birthday is 4 days off of Valentine's Day. So my entire life I've been getting chintzy Valentine's garb.
Oh, that hurts.
Yeah.
That's nasty.
Pink bears with fake flowers.
Ooh,
and, yeah, music
bears.
Boxes.
Ooh,
and
not good.
Yeah, blah, 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 blah.
However.
But fresh flowers.
From Sid's. Would be a good thing.
I would enjoy that on a Valentine's Day, or any day for that matter.
Visit SIDSonline.com to order Valentine's flowers today, and do not get Heather any frou-frou pink teddy bears.
Mm-mm.
Spending more time at home these days? Give yourself some room. Renovate your basement or attic. You'll increase your living space and your home's resale value, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687, for your remodeling needs, including additions, renovations, and other home improvements. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Heads all empty and I don't care.
So my baby down by the river
knew she'd have to come up soon for air.
It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk AM and FM. The last Sunday in January, big snowstorm coming up in the middle of the week. We're discussing some seeds and environmental issues, so let's bring in Alderman Joe Moore from the 49th Ward, City of Chicago, the fighting 49th. How you doing, Joe?
Good, Mike. I just want to go on the record as saying that I do like Valentine's Day.
I think you should. You know, as a politician,
my wife would hear none of it if I didn't get her flowers on Valentine's.
Well, no. See, we're all for flowers. We think flowers are a good thing. Everybody get flowers for your sweetie. Do not get them pink frou-frou bears.
Mm-mm.
That's
no, yeah, no, she, yeah, Barb's not a frou-frou cuddly bear type.
Alderman Joe Moore I would say you're the environmentalist in the city council, city of Chicago. I have worked with you through the Chicago Recycling Coalition for years. And one of the things you did is you stood up against Blue Bag when it was the scourge of our recycling system, and finally it went away. And I thank you for your efforts.
All of us, you, me, everyone on the Chicago Recycling Coalition and beyond, were right.
We
were right in 1993 when we said this was a goofy program that won't work, and we were right through the following 12 years where they insisted that it was working when we knew to the contrary it wasn't. And then they finally acknowledged that they were wrong, and they began implementing a serious recycling blue cart program. And guess what happened? After they got about a third of the city, they stopped. And now we have one-third of the city are the haves. They have recycling. In two-thirds of the city, including my ward, which is probably the most environmentally conscious ward in the city, are without it.
You know, there's always been a joke among the Chicago Recycling Coalition members that the last ward in the city to get blue cart was going to be the 49th. And we always laughed about that, and it was because you have been such a pain in the side to the Daley administration in certain regards, and some of them environmentally, and like the blue bag effort. And you mentioned all the people that worked for that. I want to give a shout out also to some of our great newspapers, like the Tribune was part of that. The Reader was part of that. WBEZ has, kept up on these issues too, and were great advocates and champions of getting rid of that program. And so, as you say, we all worked together, and it finally happened. And I to this day, I don't understand why the Daley administration dug in its heels about Blue Bag. It just didn't make any sense, but we're glad it's gone, and we've moved forward. And now if we could only get the rest of the blue carts rolled out. But that, in terms of recycling, that's just the tip of the iceberg, because we still have the high rises where we need to get that recycling done, and we need to look at the garbage collection as a whole, because it's all about source reduction. And I could go on and about that, but what I want to get to is the Clean Power Ordinance, which you sponsored last year, to address the problem of the Fisk and the Crawford coal-fired plants in the city of Chicago. And you've been waiting a year to get something, almost a year, to get something done on that. And then we hear that there was going to be a hearing. And then suddenly there isn't. Can you explain what's going on, Alderman Moore?
Well, I'll try. I think I know what's going on, and that's this. It's very plain and simple that the Daley administration doesn't want to have this ordinance come up for a hearing. We introduced the ordinance, as you indicated, last year in April. It was referred to the City Council Rules Committee, where it sat for the better part of 7 months until November of this year, and finally was released thanks to the good work of activists in the 33rd Ward. Alderman Dick Mell is the chairman of the Rules Committee, and it was activists in his ward that convinced him that it was a good idea to maybe get it out of rules and put it into a committee, or in this case, a joint committee, that could actually have a hearing on this and bring this legislation to the public. And we thought we had a hearing, as you indicated. It was assigned to a joint committee, the Committee on Energy, Environment, and Public Utilities, and the other committee was the Health Committee. And the new chairman of the Health Committee, Alderman Jim Balser, down from the 11th Ward, had indicated to me and to some of the activists that he would hold a hearing on this. And then all of a sudden we were informed on Friday that that was not going to be the case and that it was going to be put off indefinitely. Well, that's totally unacceptable. Totally unacceptable. And what I am planning on doing is going ahead and form my own unofficial ad hoc committee to address this important ordinance, and we're going to go ahead with the hearing on, ironically, on Monday, February 14th, Valentine's Day. So make Great. Sure you bring some flowers.
Yes, I think we ought to bring flowers and then, coat them with a little layer of soot to make a statement about what the power plants are doing to the people of Chicago. And they are releasing toxins,
those two plants are the two biggest stationary causes, meaning that they're not cars. They move. They sit in one place. The two biggest stationary causes of carbon dioxide pollution in the city of Chicago. The two major causes that the city contributes to global warming. Not to mention, as you indicated, all the soot that goes in the air. The fine particulate matter, which right now is not being regulated, studies have shown contribute to a large increase in asthma, and one study by some Harvard researchers estimated that 40 deaths a year are caused by those plants, 40 people dead.
Mm-hmm. Do you want them shut down or do you want them regulated better? Do you want them cleaned up?
We want those plants cleaned up. We think they can be cleaned up. They don't have to be shut down. The owners of the plant, Midwest Generation, is doing what industry always does when we talk about regulations for health and welfare. and they're claiming that it's going to put them out of business. Well, they made that claim many times over the years as we've enforced regulations pertaining to the Clean Air Act, and they continue to run, and they continue to run profitably. The technology is there to allow them to put on the scrubbers that'll take out those fine particulate matter, the little tiny soot particles that we're trying to regulate. And there's also the ability for them to convert to natural gas, which, while it's not a clean fuel, it's much cleaner than coal. And by converting to natural gas, they would fall within the restrictions of the proposed ordinance and greatly reduce the amount of carbon that gets put in the air and protect our children and grandchildren.
So you're going to have you're going to go ahead with your own hearing on the 14th of February. I'm sure that the people from the Chicago Clean Power Coalition, and there's more than 50 health, community, environmental, and business groups in that organization, I'm sure you want them to show up. You're going to try to attract some aldermen, but there's a lot of distractions, like elections going on right now.
There is. It's also important that we do this before the election, because an election is a good time to hold elected officials accountable. That's what elections are all about. And the public in this city, the voters in this city, need to know where their aldermen stand on this issue. We've got 16 co-sponsors. We had 18, but two of our co-sponsors, Alderman Preckwinkle and Alderman Ed Smith, have left the city council. But we've made significant progress, and we'd like to get more, obviously. We need 26 votes to pass this thing. And one of the reasons we want to have a hearing is because people are focused on the election. You know, three of the four major candidates for mayor have signed on to this ordinance. The fourth, Rahm Emanuel, while he has not specifically said he would support this ordinance, has indicated that he supports the principles underlying the ordinance and realizes that these plants have to clean up. So it boggles the mind that the Daley administration is trying to sit on this ordinance. Let's get it out to the voters. Let's get it out to the public. Let's educate people about what the issues are. That's what the democratic process is all about.
All right, and I would be remiss if I didn't mention that this Tuesday at Uncommon Ground Restaurant, 1401 West Devon Avenue, up by your ward there, there's going to be a fundraiser for your campaign, Greener Together, a benefit to reelect Joe Moore. I'm going to be there, and Howard Lerner from ELPC and my friend Sue Lannon and other people who support what you're doing. I hope people will show up because you deserve it. You've been one of the environmental champions in the city council, and it's a hard place to be an environmental champion sometimes.
Well, it certainly is, and I certainly, in order for me to continue to push this ordinance and other good environmental measures, I need to get reelected.
I would think so, yeah. You could just go freelance.
And my opponent has criticized me for devoting some of my energy to the green initiatives in the community, and believe it or not, I don't believe that he would be as strong and as aggressive as I would be on these issues if he were somehow to get elected. So I would really appreciate any support that your listening audience can.
And I hope they will. And I hope they'll show up there. Alderman Moore, great talking to you. I will see you on Tuesday.
Thank you so much.
All right, take care.
We'll see you on Tuesday.
You bet. Bye-bye. And that link is on my website, mikenovak.net. Go to this week's show, and you'll see Greener Together, benefit to reelect Joe Moore. That's it. We're out of time. What do we see? Go green or?
Go home.
We'll see you next week.